Top Hill Recording Podcast, episode 212. Tonight, our guest, Colton Points.
I slipped off my boots, so the cold of the room could keep me awake through the night. It's been a few weeks since I've heard her speak, and I don't want to miss it this time. But after no call, I assumed all the fault and reached for the bottle I kept, in case there was someone I need to forget. So I'm pouring some glasses for all of the moments I miss, until feeling the burn on my mouth is replacing her kiss. I took their advice, laid in stranger's arms twice, but I'm still here falling apart. But if nothing else works, I heard whiskey can heal broken hearts. I look back on sunsets, the I miss you love text, and hometown drives we take dark. It's then that she showed me her hands there for holding. I wish all those times I had watched moonlight fall down on her head like a crown, so my red wings weren't tied with regret. But that made me realize how foolish I'd been, so I'm pouring some glasses for all of the moments I miss, until feeling the burn on my mouth is replacing her kiss. Oh, I took their advice, laid in stranger's arms twice, but I'm still here falling apart. But if nothing else works, I heard whiskey can heal broken hearts. With the bottle half empty, not much could catch me, till I heard the phone by my bed. It helped me see patience is bitter instead of pouring some glasses for all of the moments I missed, until feeling the burn on my mouth is replacing a kiss. Oh, I took their advice, drank my way through the night, but I was still falling apart. 'Cause it's time and not whiskey, that's what can heal broken hearts. Yes, it's time and not whiskey, and that's what will heal broken hearts. With you.
Cause our smooth intoxication, nothing like the shots we've taken. It's a different kind of drunk in the backseat of the taxi. Sinking, let's cruise. Slide on over, I'll pull you closer. Like there's no room in the backseat of the taxi with you.
Change direction. Have you suddenly come back like you didn't get the message? Now she's looking for a single match that will get this spark to happen. So when she writes her number down, put a lighter to that napkin. She can make a little white ember glow in the pocket of your shirt. So if she gets close, say no to that smoke, or else it's gonna hurt, cause you'll get burned. You'll get burnt. And you'll be laying there 10 a.m. saying, wish I would've listened. Damn. And see ash all around your room and stumble to the kitchen. It's like she lit your house on fire and took your heart right with it. And left you covered in gasoline from just one bad decision. She's looking for a single match that will get this part to happen. So when she writes her number down, put a lighter to that napkin. She can make a little white ember glow in the pocket of your shirt. So if she gets close, say no to that smoke, or else it's gonna hurt, cause you'll get burned. She'll get burned. I'm standing here 10 a.m., still half lit in the kitchen. Wishing some of those cigarettes could have been more fire resistant. Cause she's looking for a single match that will get this spark to happen. So when she writes her number down, put a lighter to that napkin. She can make a little white ember glow in the pocket of your shirt. So if she gets close, say no to that smoke, or else it's gonna hurt, cause you'll get burnt.
I heard that girls from Illinois never go for southern boys, 'cause we were raised by hands we never held. But that didn't stop our first hello. The yellow sundress made it so I couldn't let you go for someone else. And I mentioned Nashville's country news. We spoke about your hometown too, and even spent some time on our grass. But that small town struck a chord with me, one that echoed harmony. Magnolia is a place I won't forget. So then in spring, when they bloom, should I send a few to you, or should I keep them for myself in the corner of my room? 'Cause I am so in love with you, and if you feel the same way too, well then we can spend our lives together, your head on my shoulder, and I hope that one day I'll be a magnolia. Now Nashville is the place to be, a town with years of history, where you can hear me sing our favorite songs. But if you choose to walk away, I won't say things to make you stay, and maybe it'd be best if I moved on. But then in spring, when they bloom, should I send a few to you, or should I keep them for myself corner of my room? 'Cause I am so in love with you, and if you feel the same way too, well then we can spend our lives together, your head on my shoulder, and I hope that one day I'll be a magnolia. Now time's passing, it's strange to me that I could still be so naive and chase a girl who barely knew my name. But she showed up in Tennessee, magnolias in her hand she speaks. I hope you know I always kept them safe. And then in spring, when they'd bloom, I'd pray to send a few so I could keep them for myself in the corner of my room. 'Cause I am so in love with you, and if you feel the same way too, well then we can spend our lives together, my head on your shoulder, and I'm glad that I can call you my magnolia. Well, I'm happy you can call me your magnolia.
How you doing, man?
Oh, great. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Dude, really thank you for making the drive. Walked out of the car and played four ridiculous tunes.
Great tunes, yeah.
Thank you.
Holy crap, man. Number one, well-written stuff. Everything was so just visually perfect, well-written. The music matched the words, the lyrics, if you know what I mean. You know what, sometimes it just doesn't fit. Everything you did fit. Your playing is ridiculous.
Yeah, oh, I mean, thank you so much.
One of the best, if not the best piano player I've seen come in the studio since I've been a part of this.
Yeah,
for
this
sure.
Is 212,
very, very,
man.
Yeah, very, very clean playing and just like right on the money. All the fills and everything were just like spot on.
Oh, yeah, dude, that means a lot. Thank you.
Dude, it was crazy. It really was. And
yeah, there were several times where Neil and I looked at each other in the headphones when you did a little run and we're like, oh man, this guy can really play.
One of my favorite things to do in this studio is the stink face when somebody does something nasty. And I did it like three times in the first song.
So that's just a trademark of the blues. Like that face has to come out when you're doing the blues, you know?
Yeah, man. So no, first of all, thank you for being here. Thank you for jumping out of the car and doing that. And you know, just spending the day with us in general, it's been very nice to meet you, but we're getting ready to dive into it, buddy. We got to get back and kind of dive into some Colton and see. What we like to do on this podcast, especially for first timers, is just kind of ask you to take us back deepest in your memory where you knew as a child or as a teenager or whenever it was that something hit you where you knew music was different to you and then you had to just dive into it and it became such a part of your life? When was it that you kind of felt like you had this musical gift?
Man, that's a good question. When I was really young, I used to sing, and it's tough. Both of my grandfathers aren't with me anymore, but I was looking at some old footage of one of my grandfathers. It was my grandfather on my dad's side. And from when I was three, I used to sing like Little Drummer Boy, and I used to sing like 747 coming out of the sky and all those things, traveling band, CCR. And I think even from that age, I mean, I think in the moment, you know, I was just a kid, but I think there was something in me that was like, I'm going to do music in one way or another. And the grandfather on my mom's side, he passed when I was three from ALS. But he always saw something in me in music for whatever reason. He told my mom, he's like, Stephanie, your son is brilliant in music. You got to get him to keep going.
And he passed when you were three.
Yeah. I'd memorize all these songs for whatever reason. You know, I don't know why. I mean, it was just, and they were like really long ones too. And so, you know, as I went on in fourth grade, I picked up the trumpet and that was, you know, that was, I guess, where it all started. I had a great teacher named Mr. Ducko, who I'm actually going to be reconnecting with here soon.
Oh, cool.
And so from there, I joined a jazz band and around like fifth or sixth grade, and all the kids in the jazz band would play piano, but they would play like Mary Had a Little Lamb. And mm-hmm. I was just always really competitive. So I was like, I need to be able to do that. There's no way that I can be the only person in the jazz band not playing the piano. So I was playing football at the time and I begged my dad to let me quit football to play the piano. And he just like, oh my gosh.
A lot of kids do that, don't they? Oh, don't a lot of kids do that? Yeah.
My dad was like, my son is a disappointment to me. but he let me quit and he bought me a piano and I took lessons for like 6 months. And I finally was like, I don't want to do the lessons anymore. And so then he ended up buying me this really old, cheap grand piano that he found and with like real ivory keys and everything.
No kidding.
And he bet me $100 and he was like, I bet you $100 you're not even going to be playing this thing in a year. And so 12 years later.
Here comes the competition in you again, right? Your competitiveness.
Like, you want to bet? Exactly right. You want to bet. And so I think at that point, I think whenever I started playing the piano, that's where it was like, I think there's something here. I love this too much.
Yeah.
To really focus on anything else. And I always played sports and stuff, but I feel like no matter how much I love sports, it always came down to playing the piano and doing music.
Well, you're sitting across from two guys that grew up playing sports and playing baseball. And I think at the end of the day, we ended up on that side too, where, you know, the sports are great, but there's something about the music and something about the aspect of diving into creation and making something from nothing that is a little bit different, I think, than you know, scoring a touchdown or hitting a home run or striking somebody out. At the end of the day, it's a cool accomplishment to be able to, you know, look back at your glory days and say, yeah, I did this and did that. But you can grow as a person with music. You can grow as a musician with music. You can grow infinitely, I think, in ways that maybe you get a little stunted as an athlete. You know, you got that drive, that competitiveness that you kind of talked about, but maybe you get stuck in that, where music maybe teaches us some more lessons too.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can probably agree. I mean, for me, one of the most influential people in my life was my high school baseball coach.
Yeah, dude.
And I mean, seriously, the reason he was so great is because he taught me what it's like to be a good person, you know, how to be a good man. I mean, you know, discipline, all those facets that are really important in music you not necessarily don't think about. But, you know, so I mean, sports are great character builders. You know, I mean, it's important to face adversity and all those things as you grow up and, you know, not make the starting nine in baseball. Yeah. That's really important, you know, it just kind of put you in your place a little bit. You know, all those things are great for growth.
Dude, Michael Jordan. I know that that's everybody's example for getting benched, but Michael Jordan being benched as a sophomore, getting cut as a sophomore in high school, created the monster that he became, really. So when I do first need to give your dad a nod, a tip of the cap, because there's not a lot of dads that would go, okay, look, if you're going to do this, that's fine. But we're going to do it. And not only after you kind of piddled with it and then gave it up a little bit, being intuitive enough to go ahead and get that beat up grand piano and then making that bet that, all right, I know this kid's kind of driven by his competitive nature. Maybe I can get him with this. And so, you know, dad, tip of the cap, man, really just being like, okay, this kid is going to go, wants to do this. We're going
to
do this.
Allow you to just do what you naturally want to do. I feel like that's kind of the thing. And like we talked a little bit off camera. I played baseball and stuff too. And yeah, I feel like when you have like a dad, you know, they want you to get into sports and it's fun to play sports. But yeah, it can be hard to like make a change into music. I feel like, so it's cool. It really is cool that your dad was just like, all right, yeah, quit football.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and you know, and it even happened before when my dad wanted me to be Tiger Woods, and he, you know, had me play golf when I was young, and I was super talented at golf, but I never wanted to practice, never wanted to putt. I always wanted to just hit my driver, you know. So I mean, like, I was like, you know, ranked in the country and stuff playing golf when I was like 5 and 6 years old, and then I was like, Dad, I don't want to play golf anymore. Please, like, let me quit. I want to play baseball, and he always let me do those things, but he always pushed me, you know, to the brink in everything that I did. He just wanted me to be the best that I possibly could be in everything that I did. And I thank my parents so much. I come from a great family, and both my parents have been super supportive of me no matter what I did. And, you know, without my dad, you know, I don't think I would have gotten other people to believe in me, you know, especially helping me financially or just pushing me. But, you know, without my mom, I don't think I would have ever believed in myself to begin with. You know, I mean, she was the one who, like, no matter what, she was like, you can be great. Even if it takes your dad a little bit to come around, you can be great, you know? And so both of them were equally as influential.
It takes your dad a little bit to come around.
I know, it's funny. My mom will call my dad Mr. Johnny Come Lately sometimes. It's pretty funny.
You finally get it, guy, don't you? Yeah, I think we could all be accused of that on some level. So speaking of, you know, family and parents, tell us a little bit about where you grew up. And I know you ended up before Nashville heading to Florida. Kind of tell us about your situation growing up, where you ended up, how you got there.
Well, man, it was really cool driving around this area because this is exactly how I grew up. And it's really cool because I haven't been back to my hometown of Cochranton, Pennsylvania, which has a population that's pretty sure decreasing now of about 1,100 people.
Is that like
people.
Amish country, Pennsylvania?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I can't tell you how many times I was late to school because I was stuck behind a horse and buggy.
I got stuck behind a buggy again.
Yeah. Oh, man, you know what? Best contractors, though. Oh, my gosh. They fixed everything in our house.
I want a barn so bad. And if they were around here, I know all I had to do is say that, and it'd be up by the time this podcast was over.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. No, they're, amazing. And so, I grew up in the country. I mean, but it was funny because I felt like I didn't really take a lot of the country with me, like stylistically. I didn't have the Cochranton accent, you know. And so, I lived there and grew up there and, you know, kind of like a double wide trailer, like kind of cemented into the ground and big yard and stuff and played sports in my yard and all that. And then, I went to high school in Erie, Pennsylvania, and which is like, that's like 40 minutes north of where I grew up. Then I moved down to Florida when I was 18 to go to college. And, that's where music started kind of taking a more important facet of my life. My freshman year of college, I went to St. Leo University, north of Tampa, and my parents had moved down to this place called Ave Maria, Florida, which is another really small town, like east of Naples. And so it was in that town that was really the reason that I ended up getting into music again. It's a cool little town built around a church. It's actually founded by
Ave Maria. I mean, that makes sense. That's the name of the place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, and it was actually founded by Tom Monahan, who is the Domino's guy. So he put like tens of millions of dollars into this town to get
like
started.
The new Domino's that's good or the old Domino's that was not that good?
I think it's the new, well, I don't want to speak on behalf of
New Domino's is awesome. New Domino's is the bomb, dude.
Well, it's, absolutely. And I've actually.
So let's just say he's the new Domino's.
He's the new Domino's.
Okay, that works.
And I've actually met him a couple times. One of the nicest guys in the world. And he's older now, but man, just he's a great guy. He's a strong Catholic. And he built, like I said, he built the town around the church, which ironically, my mom is actually the secretary of that church now, which is just kind of a funny full circle moment.
No kidding.
So then moved to Florida and I was going to school for 2 years in Tampa and I didn't like it. And I wasn't really playing piano during that time. I was just focused on going to school and living the college life.
So is this like 18 to 20 at this point? You're in college. What prompted the move to Florida? It sounds like you didn't just pick a school to go to. Your parents moved down.
Yeah, what happened was it's not that I didn't want to go to college and like, it wasn't even like a great thing. I just kind of lost interest of just like going to school and whatever. There's a lot of kind of weird things going on in my life. My senior year, I'd gotten robbed and stuff and it was like really just kind of a weird time. And so I kind of was just like, I don't really know what I want to do. It just kind of really threw my life off, really.
I can imagine. Yeah.
And so, it was time for me to go to college, I'd only applied to one school. And so I ended up just going to that school because I hadn't applied anywhere else. And so I applied to that school because it was near where my parents were going to move, and it was near Tampa, which I thought might have been kind of cool. But looking back, I mean, I wish I would have applied to like so many different. I did not like it there, you know. So yeah. Then I transferred to Florida Gulf Coast, which is another school which I graduated from now. And so
Florida Gulf Coast, they made a historic run in the NCAA basketball tournament a few years ago.
I wish I was there.
You weren't there?
No.
Oh,
no,
the team's that would have been insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, they were throwing the craziest alley-oops.
Crazy stuff.
It was insane.
Yeah.
That was the craziest run ever. All right, sorry. Back to you.
Yeah, no, I got a funny story about that. So when I went to one basketball game my entire time at Florida Gulf Coast.
All right.
And the Sweet 16 team showed up to support the basketball team. And they made a huge deal out of it. I think they were playing like Wisconsin or something. And I think that whoever they were playing, they were ranked like 18th. And I was like, this is going to be a disaster. And so, you know, the whole Sweet 16 team's watching on the sidelines. And they got smoked by like 60 points.
Oh.
It was, I felt for those guys. Because I knew a couple of them like on the team. I was friends with a couple of them. And man, I felt for those
guys. That's rough.
Yeah.
That's rough, dude. I mean, you know, they had that one spectacular year, and then you would just hope. I think that coach took another job, too, so you knew it was all downhill.
Yeah.
It was probably dirty, let's be honest. I mean, no, okay. moving to it, what was it about that time? What happened in that period of time, in that move, in that transition, that got you kind of back into playing again?
So I was living in Ave after I had moved back. After I transferred schools, I took some time and lived at Florida Gulf Coast, but I transferred during COVID. And so I was making really no friends. I was meeting like acquaintances, but like I couldn't go out to the bars, couldn't really meet people. Everyone was wearing masks in class. So like there was no interaction really. And so it was really tough. So I ended up just kind of mostly living at home and like driving to school because it was like 40 minutes away. And I had this internship at this place called Arthrex. It's like a medical facility. And I was going to just go sell their equipment and have a normal job and, you know, kind of just live a normal life. And COVID hit and my internship got canceled. And my dad comes into my room and he's like, son, I really don't care what you do, but you got to make money. So, you know, so I went out to the local pub and I asked them if I could play piano down there. And the owners had seen me one day and he came out and he was like, dude, like you're a great piano player. You should meet my son. He's back there washing dishes. He's a singer. And so his son comes out and him and I connected and we started playing like local pubs. And he was a great singer and actually the one that I wrote Magnolia with.
Oh, cool.
He came up with the idea and stuff. And so we started playing around and it was just him and I. Then we brought in a drummer who was a friend of his from high school and he was 14 at the time. I was 20, 21, and he was 17, a senior in high school.
No kidding.
And so, I mean, talk about a wild journey. We went from doing that, you know, playing local pubs and stuff in Ave Maria. And within 2 years, we were doing like the White Sox National Anthem, and, like opening for the Eli Young Band and like Chris Jansen. I mean, it was
That's nuts.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's nuts. So how did that like pick up speed like that? Just
yeah, we had a couple connections, which was good. The lead singer's family, they were pretty big up in Chicago where they were from.
Okay.
And so we had some industry people who kind of were able to help us like get started on like, okay, if you want to go play places like this, this is what you need to do. Like here are the steps. And so we just kind of followed those steps and like there's never really a formula on things, but we just grinded it out at the clubs. I mean, we did it like old school. Like we played all the time. We were playing, you know, 3-4 times a week, you know, at all the different places around Naples area and doing a lot of private shows until eventually every once in a while we'd get like the big one at the ranch in Fort Myers where, you know, like the Eli Young Band would come down and play and they wouldn't have an opener and we would apply for it and we would get it, you know?
That's crazy.
That is crazy. Yeah, very cool. I mean, you're really talented. I'm glad to hear that. You're doing cool stuff. Yeah. I know there's a lot of talented people that don't get a chance to do cool stuff too. So
and don't stick with it. I mean, how many people do you know that are talented and just go,
Yeah. Oh, I know a bunch. I mean, I'm sure you did playing sports too. You know, I knew tons of guys when I was in college playing ball that were so talented, but just really didn't give a damn about it. And you're just like, if you just tried, you would be so good. Like, you're already a lot better than me.
So when, before, I guess we have a story about the ranch that you got to tell us that I made you stop telling us earlier when you were telling us about the first song that you sang tonight.
Yes, great story. And I didn't know that it happened at the time, but it was about that song that I played, Whiskey Can't Heal Broken Hearts. Right. And so we're in this
killer
country.
Killer tune, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. We were in this, you know, insanely country bar. I mean, it was like, you know, people around here would go to this bar. I mean, it was country.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go in and we played mostly covers and it was packed. We were opening for the Eli Young Band. There were about 2,000 people in this place. And the lead singer gets on the mic and he's like, "Now, who believes whiskey can heal broken hearts?" And everyone's like, "Yeah, oh yeah, I can." And then he's like, "Well, it can't." And everyone just started booing. They're like, "Boo, boo." And I was like, "Oh man." And I was like, "Why would you say that?" And so I was like, just such a awkward. And then now it's like, now we're going to go play the song. And everyone's like already booing us before we even started.
Yeah. Who likes puppies? We do. They're terrible. Yeah. I hate dogs.
Yeah. So it's just like, so now every time I think about that song, I'm like, as long as I don't intro it like that, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, dude. You know what? He gave you a good lesson.
Yeah.
Do not do this. Don't do that ever. This is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. There were probably at least 60% of that audience had whiskey in their hand at the time. So it was not a good, not the right time.
Yeah. I guess it's like a call and response. Who thinks whiskey? And if they boo, you go, or if they cheer, they say, "You're right. You're right. But this song's not about that."
Yeah. This is the opposite.
Totally opposite. So how did you, you start with these really kind of, 14-year-old drummer, young band. You guys are together a couple years, getting some crazy breaks, doing a little bit of a quick rise, right? A meteoric rise to get to a spot where you are playing some pretty cool things. And you mentioned covers. When do you get to the point where you all start writing your own tunes? Is there just, you just decide you want to do it? Or was it always from the jump? Or did you finally get a little bit of momentum and go, "Well, look, we've got some things we can do here"?
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, I can't remember what really prompted me to start writing, but I had written basically all of our original stuff. And that's why it was kind of easy whenever I had moved on from the band. Like, I just basically just took all the music with me because I had just written it on my own. So it was easy to just kind of like move the music. But I guess there wasn't really necessarily a time when it started. I ended up getting one of those Nord pianos or whatever, and I was playing around with the sounds. And like, I don't know, you can probably attest, like if you pick up a different guitar, it like inspires, like even though it's basically, it's still a guitar, but like the different sound like inspires you to like write something. And I think that's what happened. I got the Nord and I started playing around with the sounds. I was like, "Man, this piano sounds really good."
It'd be hard not to get inspired by a Nord.
Yeah,
so.
Dude. And then I went and wrote my first song. And ever since then, I realized, I was like, "Oh, maybe actually I can write songs," because I showed it to somebody and they were like, "That's actually really good." And I was like, "Oh, well, that's good." Because I mean, the biggest fear that I always had was like, I'll write something and I think that it's good. And then I show it to people and they're like, "Yeah, that's not really that good." Because then it's like, what do you do? Like, what I think is good, nobody else thinks is good. Like, then you're in trouble, you know?
Yeah. You know, that's such an interesting question.
I think that's a common fear too for people. Like, is like when you're getting into music is like, or anything that's art related is like, "I made this," and someone's like, "That sucks." And you're like, "Oh no, like I really wanted to do this." And
yeah.
Yeah, it can be crushing, but I mean, the songs you played today, I can't imagine you writing a bad song because like those were killer, killer tunes. You're like
let's think about this. Yeah. Let's dissect this because you said something interesting, right? You always, as an artist, you want people to like what you're doing. You want everybody to be into you. You want people to think you're the best writer. Everybody wants that, but not everybody likes the style of music I play or the music you write or the music you write. And it doesn't matter if they think it sounds good. I just don't like it. I mean, there as artists, musicians, I think it can go in so many levels of life that you look for that acceptance and you look for that acceptance. You look for someone to tell you you're good enough. That song's good enough. Those lyrics are good enough. That piano line's good enough, right? When do you find, I mean, I'm still searching for this and I'm sure Earl is too, because I hear the way Earl talks about, I just strum, I do this, I do that. He doesn't ever say, "I'm a really good songwriter." Nobody does. But when do you get to the point in your life where you maybe don't need that, where you stop searching for somebody to tell you that it's good enough? Now, that first one where you're at, you have to hear somebody tell you it's good so you can write that next one. And I think you probably need that for a long time, but you know, there's some point of undeniability when it comes to a good songwriter, and which I can totally consider you to be. I mean, these songs are undeniable songs. They're well-written. They're well-played, as well-played as anything on a piano. And then you turn around and start finger-picking a guitar, which is like, "Yeah, it's you jerk." But, you know, at what point can you just go, this is open for all of us. It's good enough. I wrote it. I like it. It really doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. you know?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I know that I'm pretty far away from that for myself personally. And, you know, I don't know if it comes with the commercial success or whatever, but I think, you know, what's so hard about not looking for validation from others if as an artist is it's like, well, I have to be validated by them because if I want to do this for a living and I want to be successful, their opinion really matters to me.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to avoid that. You know, I mean, like, I can't tell you how many times I get told, you can't worry about what other people think. But I'm literally in a business where it really matters what they think.
Yeah.
And you want to be really respectful to what they think. And, you know, I mean, every great artist has to look at their fans and say, you're the reason that I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're the reason that I'm successful. And if you don't, you're just lying to yourself, really. You know, so that's what makes it really tough. It's like in a world where you wish you could not care about what other people think. It's like, well, good luck. You're not going to sell any records.
All right.
You know, you're not going to be able to do this for a living. So,
I think the question lies in this is, do you change the way you would write, theoretically, to find an audience, or do you write and let your audience find you? Because I think that it can work both ways. It can totally work both ways. And it's success. It can be successful both ways.
I think it depends on the writer.
I mean,
I think it depends on the person. I think some people are really good at writing like hits. There's all kinds of people in Nashville that just write hits.
Here you go.
And I feel like for me, like, I can't really write that way. I remember when I first just decided I kind of wanted to write, one of my biggest like hesitations was nothing I wrote sounded like it was on the radio. And I was like, who's going to listen to this? And finally I was like, well, I like these. Like, there has to be somebody somewhere that might like them too. But I think it just depends on the person, because it is like a dual-sided thing. You want to make what you want, but you do want people to care about it. I mean, you don't want to spend time and money on all this stuff and put out a record or even a single or whatever, and then no one care at all. Like, that's tough. But I think it depends too on what you want to do. I know some people that make really like kind of off the wall music and they don't give a damn about anything. They just make the music they want to make and they put it out. They produce it themselves and they don't care.
I got an example right now. I saw him today online. You brought him up before, Buddy Crime. And Buddy Crime is going to do what he wants to do.
Yes.
And right now he's like, I'm going to be at South Southwest and I keep getting booked. I keep getting shows. They keep sending me stuff. So it's like, he is as individual as anybody in the world.
Very eccentric kind of dude.
Yeah, and totally unique and interesting and very, very talented. But I think he's going to do whatever the hell he wants to do and then see what happens. And I'm kind of more along the lines of, I need people to like me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there can be a balance in it too. I mean, if you're trying to write music that people care about, maybe not write, and you have a choice to not write something that's crazy, don't do that. Like, I feel like you should always lean into what you naturally go towards. Like, I think that's, at least for me, I feel like that's what I always try to do, is whatever comes natural first is probably the best thing. If I start getting outside myself and what I'm good at, it starts really falling apart for me. And I think some people are better at adapting, but I'm not.
Yeah, there has to be some grounding authenticity in what you do. And you can, and like, I mean, especially a lot of the stuff that I write, as you saw with like those four songs, those are all pretty different.
Totally.
And I do try to like shotgun myself to really try and write all these different styles, but it still has to be connected to me somehow. And like, sometimes I write stuff because I'm thinking like, yeah, maybe I will pitch that song and somebody will sing it better or whatever. But, and I certainly have a wheelhouse, you know, like ballads are more kind of my wheelhouse, especially like with the piano, you know, but I try not to limit myself in that, even if that is like the best thing that I do. It's like, well, I don't want to be like just that one trick pony. I do want to do other things. And because one thing that I've learned about writing songs that all sound really different, everybody has a favorite. And I think that's super important. And, you know, it's hard because if you're trying to make it as an artist and you're going to go to a label, you're going to go to a publisher, you have to walk, and it's a very thin line. You have to walk the line of, yes, I'm really versatile, but I know who I am. A label sees a bunch of different stuff and they're going to say, this kid has no clue who he is.
Mm.
And they're not going to sign you. It's just the way it is. They want us. There has to be some like grounding factor in all of them, whether it's your voice or whether it's like a lyric thing that you do, or it's like some type of signature, you know, whether it's the piano or whatever. And so that's what's really hard. You have to be really clever in your production and things if you're going to try and shotgun a whole album, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I never, you know, I always love when somebody like what you did today come in, did four songs that are kind of, they're like you said, they are different. They're really different. So I enjoy that. I enjoy seeing the versatility in somebody's writing. And I totally, dude, I loved the two middle songs, the Backseat of the Taxi and
song
Burned.
Was killer.
Killer. And I mean, Burned was killer.
Yes.
It's like, which was interesting when you bring up ballads, because the ballads, they were good. I love Magnolia's great, and Whiskey Can't Heal a Broken Heart.
Yeah.
Dude, I've never known names before. I'm 4 for 4. Anyway. Those two middle songs, I'll be thinking about those for the next week.
For sure.
So
and all of them were so good.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice to hear some versatile stuff. I mean, we're in here every week and we hear all kinds of different stuff, and not, like I said, my stuff is all kind of similar to itself. Like, I feel like it fits, but you're very different. I like that. And so, yeah. And it's been a, just, it's always, I say this almost every week, but it's always my highlight of my week to get to come and do this and meet people like you who write these songs and get to talk with you and stuff. I mean, you're very well spoken. All your answers are very interesting. It's just, it's a good time, and I'm glad that you're here.
Oh, God. Well, seriously, thank you guys for having me. It was awesome, and it's definitely worth the drive. And I love the studio, man. It's great.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Hey, so this, I figured it out. So I'm editing some videos for Earl right now. He was episode 209. And he always talks about, he just writes these kinds, I just write country songs. And I realized he doesn't write any country songs. He sings with a country voice because he has a country accent, but he writes like funk songs, like 70s chill difference. And they're not country. You barely write country.
I'm not that country, so.
Let me tell you, what it reminds me of is, and Earl and I have talked about it several times before, what Brent Cobb's new album, mm-hmm. It's not country whatsoever.
It's good.
But it's just good.
Just good.
Good
just
stuff,
good music.
You know,
man.
It's good music. It's fun. And it has a little bit of that retro aspect to where then it kind of gives you that flashback memory of being, of listening to the Eagles, listening to these.
How
like,
you having flashback memories to listen to the Eagles, bro? Like when you listened to them last week on Spotify?
Out of the womb.
What are you talking about? All right, I'm just kidding.
But yeah, like it's just one of those things in listening to your stuff. I definitely felt like it had that, you know, it had. Because it reminded me of a little bit of Billy Joel, a little bit like
Jason
Nielsen.
Mraz, man.
Yep, Jason Mraz. You know, just these great, very versatile, but also iconic people to where it's like, you know who they are, but you also know what their abilities are too.
Well, it's awesome. Flavors, you know what I mean? Like you moved to Nashville, right? And you I don't know. We'll talk about where you're at in Nashville within the industry and all that right now. But you know, when you're moving there, you kind of do have to follow some of the rules, which I believe, like, dude, Magnolia is such a well written tune and can be on the radio and be, and even Whiskey, if the Whiskey can't fix Broken Heart, Heal Broken Heart. But the other two, even there's so many flavors of different stuff, like the Billy Joel you said, and like the things that I love with lyrics and well-written lyrics is also having a melody line that makes sense and fits what you're playing. That's kind of what I was talking about, is like the lyrics fit what you were doing on the piano so well. Also with Magnolia, with the finger style, you know, it just eases into that beautiful chorus. But the versatility of what you do, how does that play in a town like Nashville? I would say, from my opinion, outside looking in, the sound of Nashville is kind of getting a little bit bigger. It's not so much just the four to the floor anymore. It's not so, you know, you're kind of getting those influences from leaking over from the Tyler Childers and the people that grew up listening to the Sturgill Simpsons and those guys that are now writing and doing those things, and the Stapletons and just the geniuses out there. So what does that look like to you right now of kind of getting in that mix and really diving into the scene in Nashville?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to dissect there. What's crazy about Nashville is it's exploded. I mean, there's like 100 people moving there a day, and
it's
probably
nuts.
35 of them are musicians.
I mean, 28 cranes the last time I drove by downtown Nashville.
Yeah, it's
28 cranes in the city.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And I mean, I live right downtown, and when I look out my window at all the buildings, there's probably hundreds of songs being written at any given time in that place. It's the songwriting capital of the United States. And if not even the world at this point. I mean, it's unbelievable. And the biggest challenge of Nashville It's just like, okay, you're here. How are you different? What makes you different? And so that's the first question that they're going to ask themselves. Like if you're an agent or a label, whatever, it's like, what makes this kid different from everybody else who comes here? And so for me, you know, my number one thing is I'm trying to put the piano front and center, you know. And actually I just got introduced, not personally, but a friend of mine knows him really well in Nashville. His name's Tucker Wetmore. And he only has one song out and it's absolutely blown up. It's called Wine and Whiskey. And he's doing something really similar. And I'm really interested to see kind of where he goes. And his stuff's like more hip hop country, which is once again, another like, where did this come from? You know, I mean, like, because Morgan Wallen blew up this like pop style and is like bringing it all into Nashville, all this LA influence, you know, like now Nashville's almost turning into LA, especially with all the people from LA moving over here, you know? So, and that's what's really interesting about the place. Like there's no right or wrong country anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tucker Wetmore is a good example because he sounds very similar to Morgan Wallen and he's a country twanger in a sense, but he's doing pop, you know, it's just country lyrics. So it's like, what is country anymore? Is it even still a thing? It's certainly not what George Jones, you know, like George Jones, that's what I think is country. You know, George Jones, Old Willie, you know, that's not really around anymore. But what's really cool is that there are people who are bringing it back. And there's a guy by the name of Zach Top. He's doing like the classic country, like, and he is the real deal, like, you know, picker, you know, he's an amazing bluegrass picker, amazing country picker on the guitar, incredible voice. Like those guys are still around. And like you said, like the Tyler Childers, the Zach Bryans, those guys are coming back. Because I feel like the further and further that we go towards like the synthetic drums, synthetic bass, 808s, all that stuff, that heavy pop, the more room there is for people who are doing the exact opposite. You know, Cody Johnson, so he comes out on stage and he's like, everything you hear up here is live. You know, we don't do tracks. That's not how we do things. Whatever you hear is us playing. Yep. And like, he makes that a point. And some of that stuff's getting lost. You know, I watch Bailey Zimmerman play and he played to tracks. And there's nothing wrong with it. Like, I'm not downplaying it at all. But like, that's just a different style. Yep. That's not the style that I want to do.
Totally.
You know, and so Cody coming out and saying, hey, I'm playing, you know, the real deal here.
Yeah.
You know,
so, and I mean, as a player that like yourself, man, you appreciate that. You go, look, It's the art of music.
And I mean, I just feel like you'll always, even the people who use tracks, I feel like everyone would enjoy it more if there was just a live band. I feel like there's something like live music. Even in here, we've had like hip hop artists come in here and have backing bands. And it is the coolest stuff.
So good.
Oh,
really
is. It's incredible. It's, you know, so like those tiny desk concerts that they do. Mm-hmm. And you're just sitting there like, that is like amazing. It takes the musicality of the song to just a whole nother level. And you realize like, there is so much musicality in this, but you didn't, but you didn't notice it because it was all synthetic before.
Yeah.
You know, and like the thing, you know, one thing I'll say, like Bailey Zimmerman, he sounded great. He sounded amazing. He might even sounded the best out of all of them, but you appreciate what Cody Johnson does because it is raw and it's just him, you know? And so they're both important, you know, and both of them are extremely successful. You know, it comes down to different philosophy, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, like for my recordings, you know, we don't really tune the vocal very much. You know, we just don't really see the purpose in that, even though I'm not, you know, the best singer. Singing like isn't my strong suit. It's more the piano. But you get all the emotion in there when you're a little flat on a note, or it's like a little gritty, you know? I mean, like, that's what makes it great.
And if we're talking about, like, the recordings on Magnolia and all that stuff, dude, those still sound absolutely amazing. There's nothing lyrically off on them. So I'm recording a couple groups right now, and I find that you can nitpick the feel out of a song.
You totally can. You can kill it.
You can kill a song that sounds good from the, after you hit stop on the first recording, it's got the feel, it's got that stuff, but you start pulling this out and pulling that out and adding this new line and adding this, you know, it just can kill it.
Yeah. One thing that I'm a huge believer in is, you know, when it comes down to songwriting, you know, what's meant to happen in that moment, I much prefer to write in one sitting, you know, just by myself and just be a vessel for the room, for God and the energy around me. And whatever's meant to come out in that session is what's meant to be there. I hate going back and, you know, 3 days later, it's like, certainly is there potentially a better line here?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know what it is, but, you know, it's like, why go back and ruin what was perhaps meant to be there? And I always find that, like, as the farther time goes on and I look back, I'm like, man, that line is perfect just the way it is.
That's the one. Yeah.
You know?
Dude, totally agree. All right. So, you know, we never really talked about your transition from Florida to Nashville. What was it that brought you, that made you go, all right, I'm going to give this a shot. What brought you to Nashville?
So I was at a point where I was getting ready to move on and leave the band. And I, when I first started playing, I wasn't even into country music. It wasn't even a thing of mine. And ironically, one of the first songs that the lead singer and I decided to cover was Crazy Girl by the Eli Young Band. And then we went and opened up for him. Just like crazy full circle moment, you know? Killer yeah, team. Lee Bryce song.
Was amazing. That before you opened for him, you decided to start covering that or after?
Yeah, it was when I first met the lead singer.
Hilarious.
And we were like, hey, he was like, check this song out called Crazy Girl. I'd never really listen to any country music.
Fortuitous.
And I didn't even think about Nashville. Even when I first started the band, I wasn't thinking Nashville at all. My whole mind was set on LA. I'm gonna go to LA. I'm gonna be, you know, a pop singer. I don't know. You know, I think my original plan was probably just to like do session work with the piano and stuff and like try and get in the room with Justin Bieber or something
there
and
you
wing
go.
It, you know? but yeah, I eventually got to a point where after I came to Nashville, I realized I was like, holy cow, okay, this place is like just full of people like me who just love music and this is what they want to do. And I think what drew me even more to Nashville once I got there and started meeting people was at first I was really nervous. I was like, oh my gosh, you want to talk about competition? Like I'm no longer like the only piano player in Southwest Florida anymore, you know? And so I got here and I was like, oh gosh, everyone's going to be out to get you or whatever. And I realized it's not like that at all. Everyone wants to be your friend, not for like malicious purposes either. I mean, like they literally just want to be your friend because you all have something in common. And it's like, hey man, you want to get together and write? And it's like, this place is not competitive at all. It's collaborative.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to try and make it together. And, you know, because you just never know who's going to blow up. You know, you want to kind of be with everybody's circle. Not in like a using way, but just like, you just want to be friends with everybody because everyone's kind of doing something cool and different, you know?
Dude, it's a killer way to think about it, especially, you know, you're still young. And if you can understand that early, that's the mindset to have. You know, the one thing that I've learned about podcast and music, and it took me a while to get there, is there's room for everybody. The more you support other people, the more support you get. The more you're somebody's cheerleader, the more they cheer for you. And in a place like Nashville, man, it's awesome for us to hear that that's what's happening down there, especially with, you know, the younger crop of musicians, because I think that's super important. It's only gonna, I think it promotes growth from all of y'all.
Yeah, I agree. You know, like I was talking about Tucker Webmore, he's playing the piano. I mean, technically, he's like the closest person I know to being like a direct competitor of mine, of like doing the piano center stage. And I don't view him as competition at all. I'm really excited for him to see what he does because it is different. It's really cool. And I'm excited to see if it works. You know, because if so, it's like, it's good for me, you know?
Yeah.
And he's somebody that I'd love to collaborate with because he is doing something similar. Like, who knows what we could write together, you know?
So. Yeah. You know, what does success for you, you know, as a 20-something year old musician moving to Nashville, taking over, taking the reins on figuring out what the next step is, what does success look like for you? Is it something to where you have to be on a touring stage? Does it have to be writing your own stuff, studio musician? Do you know yet what success looks like for you? Success for you, what's it look like for you now?
Well, I mean, just as I'm sure you can imagine, I mean, I want to do the tour, you know, I want to obviously be able to sell a ton of records, and I hope people love my music, and I want to be influential, and I want to be able to help people, of course, through my music in any way that I can. But something that's really important and has become really personal with me was, my mom was bullied in school when she was in high school. And the second song that I ever wrote, I don't know where I came up with the idea from, probably somewhere up there, I'm assuming. It's called God's Heartache on Sunday. And I started, you know, asked my mom one day, I was like, you know, what was going on when you were bullied in school? And she's like, well, you know, they would call me names and stuff. And, you know, a lot of the very standard bullying of the 80s. And, you know, it was a really tough time for her. And, you know, I realized that, man, even if you aren't bullied, you'd probably know somebody that has. And it's probably somebody that might even be really close to you. So, I mean, we're all kind of affected in some way by it. And so I felt like, you know, if I were to be successful in music, you know, the first thing that I'd want to do is try and help other people get some of the opportunities that I've had. You know, me moving to Nashville, I have a business partner and now I have a great manager. And, you know, so I've been given great opportunities already, even being in Nashville a very short time. And I feel like I can already look back at just what I've done so far and say, man, I really got a shot to do this. Mm-hmm. And that can never be taken away from me. No matter what I end up doing in my life, whether it's music, whether it's not, I can look back and say, you know what? I got a chance and it either was meant to be or it wasn't. But no matter what, it's like, I got that opportunity. And there's so many kids out there who don't. And they may be the most talented kids in the world, but they don't get a platform. They don't get a chance, you know, to say that they got their shot. And that's the crime, you know? And like, that's what's hard about being successful is like understanding that, like, you know, it's like, why me? You know, why do I get this chance?
Well, there's chance, there's talent, there's opportunity, but there's also hard work.
Absolutely.
You got, putting in the effort that you're putting in, making the decision to make the move, meeting those other artists and doing those things, finding ways to get managers and ways to get your music recorded. That's not just, you know, talent. That takes the work. That takes the connections. That takes getting things done. And
That's the hard stuff.
Yeah. That's the stuff that takes that effort. So you are doing the things that will lead you in the direction that if those the opportunity and luck and all those chance meet, you'll be prepared and ready for it. You know, you're putting yourself in that position to knock it out of the park when you get that chance, for sure.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying that, you know, and I mean, and really the I think where I want to end up, you know, is to have like a God's Heartache on Sunday foundation of of some kind, and to be able to, you know, find kids in schools, help put them through school, or if, you know, if they want to do music, you know, like buy their instrument or something, you know, something where they can at least get started. And, you know, as they, if they go through high school and they're like, I want to do music, you know, like maybe I can build something around me, like a team of managers or agents or whatever, just like to help them kind of get started and get on their path, you know, if they, and you know, if they really want to do it, they want to work hard, and you know, they deserve a chance. So
killer, man, killer. Well, just from our little bit of time that we've had together, man, I can tell that you've definitely got your heart in the right place, your head in the right place. I think that your ability to write a tune is awesome, and your playing's next level.
Yeah, very well rounded. Like, we see all kinds of people in here, and just kind of like Neil said, all the way around. You're writing, you're singing, you're playing. Obviously, you're set up here with your manager, and it seems like you kind of are set for takeoff,
if
you will.
Yeah. You already done it once with the band, man. It's time to do a solo, right?
I know. That's the thing. You know, we had a great run, you know, with the band, and you know, they wanted to stay in Florida and I wanted to move to Nashville, and you know, it was a fine breakup, you know, it wasn't anything bad. And you know, and so I'm ready to do it on my own now. And it's tough. Like it's hard to be the one who's responsible for everything in the end, for sure. At least like with the band, you know, you got a little bit of slack, you know, the two guys standing around you. Totally. So when it's you, it's you, you're the brand, you know, it's your name.
Yeah.
So it's,
I have a man, I believe in it. I think it'd be fun to watch from this side of it. So what do you, for the next, say, half year, 6 months or so, what's upcoming for you? Do you have any releases or anything coming up soon?
Yeah, I don't have any dates or anything yet. We're determining on what song that might be, and, you know, put a video out or kind of what it's going to look like. But I can build the anticipation that the album is getting done right now. We recorded 15 songs.
Oh, wow.
One of them being Magnolia. Whiskey was another one, which I'm super excited to put that out at some point here soon.
That's cool.
We're still all talking as a team of what we want to do. Certainly Whiskey's on the table. And that one just sounds awesome in the full recording with the band and in the strings and the pedal steel and everything. Yeah, it's really cool. So
15 tracks, huh?
15 songs, yeah.
15
and so
tracks.
We'll probably end up going with like some type of EP at some point, and that'll probably be the main focus for this year.
You're just going
like
to narrow those 15?
6 to 7 songs, and you know, and focusing on that, and then you know, working on the album at some point. You know, to get everything done.
So do you think you'll narrow those down out of that 15 and then scrap the other the rest of them, or will you put that all out?
No, we'll put it all. Because they're good. We did them fully at a place called Dark Horse, recording down in Franklin, Tennessee. So, I mean, it was a big budget project, and we were like, we want to go all in. We got the best session guys that we could, got a great engineer and producer, and I even got this through my manager. He's been friends with him for a long time. His name's Michael Omardian. He's done everything from playing accordion on Piano Man to producing Christopher Cross. And I mean, he's truly an absolute legend in the industry. And I had the honor of meeting him. And I showed him one of my songs called Poem in the Sand, which we're also considering for a release. And he's putting strings on it, as well as another song called The Last Time I Do. So those two will definitely be in that, probably that first EP album.
Man.
So I mean, it's going to just be, it's really exciting stuff.
Sounds
and
exciting.
It's all very different. So I mean, you know, the songs that you heard here, like the other ones are different from those. So, you know, my hope is that there will at least be something for everybody, but still there will be a recognizing factor of me.
Oh man, that's exciting.
So.
Sounds like a lot, man. It sounds like a lot to be excited about, for sure.
That's going to be awesome. Yeah, thank you.
All right, so where, for all the people listening or watching, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can check out my website, ColtonPoints.com. I have all my tour dates and stuff. So if you're in the Nashville area, you want to come watch me play, I'd really appreciate the support. You can check out my Instagram, Colton Points. All my socials are pretty much just my name, Colton Points or Colton Points Official in some capacity. So give me a follow. I'd really appreciate it. Go check out Spotify and Apple Music. You can stream Magnolia as well there. So definitely go check that out. I have another song, Timber, that's out right now if you want to go check that out too. So yeah, but thank you guys. Seriously, so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, seriously. Thank you for coming. Check us out on tophillrecording.com and Spotify, and make sure you subscribe on YouTube. That's the most important, I do believe. Another good one, Earl.
Yeah, had a great time. Thanks for coming on.
Colton, appreciate you, buddy.
Yeah, thank you.